Stay tuned now for Dr. Steven Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Steven Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Steven Zelikoff, and welcome to another edition of Bone Talk. Today, I have a co-host, Dr. Yasmin Dar, who was head of sports medicine at Montefiore New Rochelle and is a sports medicine specialist who specializes in disorders of the knee as well as the shoulder. And we're going to be talking a little bit about arthritis of the knee, common questions regarding knee replacement surgery, when do you need it, when can you avoid it, how can you avoid it, and trying to dispel some of the misconceptions about knee replacements, such as how long they last, what you can and can't do after a knee replacement. So, Dr. Dar, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us on Bone Talk.
Thank you for having me. I think this will be a good episode for a lot of people. I know we've spoken a lot about some of the things I do, which are the meniscus and the early stages of some arthritis, and now we're going to move on to your specialty, which is joint replacements and managing arthritic pain. So I think a good place to start is just what is arthritis, because I think it's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and I'm not exactly sure a lot of people know exactly what that is.
Well, arthritis is basically inflammation of the joint. Arthro in Latin is joint, and itis is any kind of, you have any kind of inflammation or pain, is like bursitis, tendonitis, things like that. So it's basically it's inflammation or pain within the joint. Most commonly, it's caused by wear and tear, which is the joint is basically made up of bone and cartilage. The cartilage is actually the lining that comes to the end of the bone. And usually, when you think about the knee, you've got three components of it. You've got the femur, which is your thigh bone, tibia, which is your shin bone, and your kneecap or your patella. And all those have a lining, and that's the cartilage within the knee. Now, the knee is also stabilized by a series of ligaments. You've got the anterior cruciate that football players love to tear and you love to reconstruct, the posterior cruciate, as well as the medial and lateral collateral, which are the ligaments on the side. Now, and then there's the menisci, which are little shock absorbers on the inside of the knee. All these things are there to protect the joint and to stabilize it, to make it nice and stable and controlled. The thing is that if you tear one of these things, then what happens is the knee doesn't function the way it was supposed to at birth, and what then occurs is that arthritis can go on and set in. So what usually happens in arthritis is just really a thinning of that cartilage, that protective layer. Cartilage doesn't really have nerve endings in it, but bone does. So as we wear away those surfaces of the joint, they become more and more painful and stiff, and you get swelling and limitations of motion and function.
So those are the common symptoms people get with arthritis. They'll come in, you know, starting to have pain or swelling, or how do they know it's arthritis and not something else?
Well, it varies, and it varies. Some people, it's interesting, too, because pain is so subjective in how people sort of perceive pain. I see people that come in with knees that are really, really worn out, and they've got a little bit of pain, and some people don't have much disease at all, and they come in with a great deal of it. Usually the things that tend to become most bothersome is usually a stiffness, that you get up in the morning, your knee doesn't move as well, it takes a while to loosen up. It could be clicking, it could be catching, it could be pain and swelling within the joint. So those are the most common symptoms that people tend to get. And also what happens is that with arthritis, a lot of times people complain of pain at night. During the day when they move around, they kind of feel okay. And then nighttime, all of a sudden, they become more and more aware of their body parts. And we see this a lot, certainly around the knee. I'm sure you see a lot with your patients with shoulder problems, where a lot of times they sleep on their side and they complain of shoulder pain.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of times with the knee arthritic patients, it's that stiffness is their biggest complaint. When they move around during the day, it feels okay, and then at night they rest, they try and bend their knee a certain way, maybe it swells, and then they get the stiffness and the pain. So when should someone come to the doctor?
Basically, I mean, most people that tend to have a little bit of stiffness, if it's something that you just developed, you play tennis, you played more than you should have, and all of a sudden your knee gets a little swollen, you know, put some ice on it, maybe take some Tylenol or Advil if you're not on a blood thinner, and see how you do. I think that lots of things just get better with time. The body has an amazing ability to heal itself. But if you find after a couple of weeks that you're really not getting better, that you continue to have the stiffness, you've tried some Tylenol, you've tried some ice, and you still really have symptoms, then at that point, it's really a good idea to see a specialist just to make sure that there's nothing in the knee that really needs be taken care of. Because the worst thing you can do, particularly if you're young and otherwise active, is to take something that can be fixed rather easily and let it go on to become worse and worse. And that actually falls not so much in what I do, which is arthritis surgery, but particularly in your situation where you can take a small meniscal tear and then propagate it, make it bigger, and you take something that can't be repaired and make it into something that all of a sudden now has to be removed.
Right. That's very true. I mean, I think most people, you know, a week or so, and then they'll seek evaluation. But there's always those people that, you know, have come in and said they've had 5 months of pain and swollen knee and limping. And those are always the ones I worry a little bit about. You know, I always tell someone it's best to just get it looked at, make sure that it's nothing major or, you know, and know what to do next. And we've spoken about this. There's a lot of non-surgical options for knee problems, especially knee arthritis. The most common ones you use are what?
Well, basically, I think the thing which I want to reinforce to our listeners and to patients in general is that just because you come to a specialist doesn't mean you need to have surgery. And I think that we really focus on trying to avoid surgery whenever possible, because the bottom line is that there's no such thing as a small operation when it's on you. However, there are really, really good non-surgical options for people where it's amenable. The most common things are things like anti-inflammatory medications, things like anti-inflammatories like Motrin, Advil. There's other prescribed ones, things like Meloxicam, Celebrex, things of that nature, Voltaren. The problem is that there's no free lunch. The fact is that anti-inflammatories are great when they work, but the problem is they all have side effects. And one of the most common causes of people going to the emergency room is bleeding because they're on too many Advil and too many anti-inflammatories that can affect your stomach, that can affect your blood pressure. Many patients that I see, particularly that are a little older, have issues with blood pressure, and a lot of them are on medicine for their blood pressure, and then they're going out there and taking anti-inflammatories that raise their blood pressure. So I'm a huge fan of anti-inflammatories in the short term, usually a week or two. But if you're not getting any relief after that period, then I recommend going ahead and, again, getting something else looked into and seeing if there's other alternatives for treatment. Other things that people look into are nutraceuticals, or things which are like medicines that are not medications, that are not traditional prescription meds. People talk about glucosamine and chondroitin. They talk about turmeric, other types of food additives that they feel sometimes can help. Now, people say that they feel better with this, and I think that there's no real downside to it. There have been FDA trials comparing these things to placebo or like a sugar pill, and found that there really hasn't been any benefit. But I have a lot of patients that basically come in saying that they take these things and they feel better. My feeling at that point is that as long as there's no downside to it, then please go ahead. Other thing which is now popular are things like CBD ointments. And again, no real data to show that it actually helps, but having said that, there's patients that I have that basically use it and really feel a lot better. In terms of other things which are helpful, physical therapy and activities are helpful, whether you go to a formal physical therapist or whether you do exercises on your own. What I tell my patients, if it's physical, it's therapy. So we want you to move. We want you to bend your knee. The best investment somebody can make into is like an exercise bike or a treadmill if it's in the winter, or just go outside and move. You know, bracing is helpful. There's various types of braces, all the way from like almost like a sleeve that you can put on that kind of gives your knee a hug, all the way to unloader braces that transfer the load from one side of the knee to the other, if the arthritis is mostly in one compartment. And lastly is injections. And I know that you've used injections a lot in your practice as well, Dr. Dar. They definitely can help. You know, I think that they really help for early inflammation, particularly cortisone. If you have, if you twisted your knee, if there's some swelling, a cortisone shot makes a world of difference and gets you better. The downside, it doesn't last forever. And usually the benefits are fairly short term. You've got to be careful, particularly with cortisone in people which are diabetic, because it can raise your blood sugar, so you need to be careful. People oftentimes ask, how many cortisone shots can you get in a year? I usually tell them maybe 3 to 4, but again, that varies from practice to practice. What do you tell your patients, Dr. Dar?
Generally, I mean, it depends on the problem, but, you know, certain things, the issue with cortisone is it can deteriorate the joint. And then if I'm treating an arthritic shoulder, say, and someone who's older who may never really be, you know, a candidate for anything more, I think 3 to 4 is reasonable. I do have those patients that, you know, come in, you know, 3 weeks later, they're like, oh, I need another shot. 3 weeks later, oh, I need another shot. And my feeling is it's diminishing returns at that point. I mean, you're not, if you don't get a long enough term effect from any treatment, whether it be medication, you know, we have those topical gels now, I think, you know, at some point you have to move on to the next step. And there are a lot of options. I know we've had a conversation about stem cells and PRP and also what's called hyaluronic acid. I mean, there's a lot of other injection options, too, that I know you use.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the hyaluronic acid injections, the gel shots, people call them, they come the rooster shots because they actually come from the rooster's comb. So all these things have become fairly popular. There's ads on TV about, you know, how you inject them and using imaging to put them into the knee. But the reality is that what it does is that it lubricates the knee joint. If it works, it can last up to 6 months. The big thing to keep in mind with these things is that they don't grow cartilage, and it doesn't change the natural history of your joint. So that if you do have arthritis and you've got a wedding coming up or there's a life event that's coming up that you can have surgery for and you just need to stay comfortable, then I think these shots can be helpful. But I think that long-term, you just have to keep in mind is that you're essentially kicking the can down the road, and at some point, if you do have advanced arthritis of your knee, you're going to need to look into other options. Other things which you mentioned before are things like PRP and stem cells. You want to tell us a little about what your thoughts are about those and how they work?
I think the research on PRP, which is your blood spun down and the plasma and growth factors injected in, is pretty good for pain for knee arthritis, and a lot of the research was done in knee arthritis. But again, you know, I think you made a very good point. None of this regrows cartilage. You know, I tell people with the visco and the hyaluronic acid, it's like an oil change for your knee. PRP and stem cells, I think, do pretty well for pain. I mean, it's still considered somewhat experimental, so a lot of insurances don't cover it. But you know, the stem cells are a little different. You know, maybe surgically, if you have a small area, you know, which is more my specialty, say a small 2-centimeter area of cartilage, you know, lost, you might be able to grow some in the smaller sense with stem cells. But a little larger, more diffuse, which is generally your realm of specialty, I think pain, you know, and that's all you're really trying to do is treat pain one way or another. So if you make someone's pain better, I think they work, the research is there for it.
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, to your point, I think the stem cells tend to work best if you have a pothole in your knee. I think that if the whole road is shot, then you basically are going to need something more like a replacement. But I think that the stem cells really do work. And there are really good things that if you're young and you've got a small defect in your knee, then I think that there have been some amazing advances now using patches and stem cells and sponges and little caps that you can put into the knee, which really do help, and they do work well, and they actually do prevent people developing progressive arthritis. So, which is another reason why if you do have an injury to the knee with pain, swelling, please see a specialist, you know, get a study, maybe an MRI, to get a better look as to what's going on, because I think for things like that, there really are great advances in terms of how you can go ahead and treat arthritis and defects of the cartilage and try to getting them better. And I think that Dr. Doris, you've had a lot of experience with those things.
We try and do, you know, I always tell people we'll try and do the least invasive to get you the best we can get you. And I think MRIs are great modalities, but also, you know, an X-ray, a standing weight-bearing X-ray can give you a lot of information. And I know everyone is very keen on having an MRI because it's so specific and sensitive to every, you know, little detail of your knee. But I always like to start with an X-ray, as I'm sure you do, because that does give you a lot of information about the alignment of someone's knee, you know, if they're compressing a certain area in their knee. And, you know, you can start there and see what their options are without, you know, jumping to, say, something surgical.
Absolutely, I agree.
But, you know, then there we all have these patients. They've tried everything, medication, topical gels. They've gone to acupuncture, which a lot of people use. They've done injections, and these injections are supposed to last months. And, you know, sometimes they used to work, you know, 3 years ago, and now they don't work as well because, you know, unfortunately, arthritis does tend to progress. I use a lot of car analogies, and I kind of tell people it's like tires on your car. You know, they wear every mile. So how much they wear and how much it affects, you know, your vehicle can be different. So at some point, you know, the question is when do people know when do you need surgery? When has this become a move from a non-surgical problem to a surgical problem?
So basically what I tell people is that when they come in, the number of bad days start to outnumber the good days. That's when it's time to think about having surgery done. I think that the big reason the people that need surgery tend to shy away is because of common misconceptions. And I think that one of the misconceptions, and the most common, is that they wear out, the joint replacements wear out usually within 5, 10, 15 years, and they need to have it done again, which is a fallacy. Most of the current implants that we now have available can last up to 45 years or so, depending on weight and activity. So, I mean, they've really become lifetime implants. Many of the implants now we have available to us we can do without using cement or glue. They usually historically had worn away over a period of time. So I think that the longevity of the prosthesis is something that's really made a big difference in terms of when people go ahead and feel like they need to go ahead and have surgery. The other misconceptions is that I'm not going to get out of bed and walk for weeks at a time. You know, we get people up the same day. They're walking the same day. They're doing stairs the same day. Many of our patients now can go home the same day. So I think that the way we manage surgery, particularly with knee replacements, has really changed in terms of what people's level of activity is, when they can go back, what they can go back to do. I mean, I tend to let my patients go back pretty much to most activities. The only thing which I don't love them doing is long-distance running, like marathons. But I usually let people jog short distances. We usually let people hike, bike, swim, tennis, ski. I usually, with skiing, I just tell them not to do bumps and to ski about a level below where they were skiing before. But I think that a lot really has to do about getting people's life back. And I think that that's really what the biggest issue is. The one thing which I just like to bring to play is the fact is that, A, you don't have to live in pain. And B, is that don't wait until you're really stiff and miserable, because the stiffer your knee is and the more miserable you are coming into the operation, the more difficult the recuperation is going to be after surgery. So I think that, you know, if you really have tried other options and you're really getting to the point that you can't do the things that you want to do, you can't go and walking with your friends, you can't chase after your grandkids, then, you know, seriously think about getting this taken care of. And, you know, I think that there's different treatment options that we have for dealing with people with knee arthritis. I mean, one of the things is like a knee arthroscopy, where you go in and do a washout of the knee. You know, that we used to do that a lot, and it, you know, it sort of gets people better for a very short period of time. We've stopped doing that very much because people really didn't get better for long periods. And then data on how people did with joint replacements after a knee arthroscopy really didn't pan out very well. So we've really sort of tried to shy away from, like, the washout procedures. So if you have arthritis and you've got a locked knee or there's something stuck inside there, then absolutely we'll go in and clean it out. But I think that for just sort of like putting off knee replacement, it really doesn't play out well. And I think my experience has been I've really stay away from doing that if possible. And the other options really are replacement surgery. And there's two types. One is a partial knee replacement, where we're just replacing one part of your knee. So if all of your arthritis is on the inner compartment of your knee, then we just do that. We don't have to replace the other part of it if your knee is flexible and strong and the rest of the knee is fine. And the other alternative is a total knee replacement, where we replace the entire joint.
I think you made some really good points. I mean, a lot of even my patients, because I'm more of the arthroscopy kind of sports realm, They'll think they're too young. You know, they'll hobble along waiting until they're, quote, old enough for a knee replacement with, you know, a terrible knee that's painful and they can't do anything they want to do, thinking that they're too young for a knee replacement. And I think we agree when we speak to patients and we tell them that, you know, at some point you want to be able to do the things you want to do. You don't want to wait until 20 years from now when you can't do any of the things you want to do. Plus, these implants are last significantly longer than the ones that they were doing. Well, actually, you were probably doing 20 years ago.
Don't be like that, Dr. Dar.
No, I mean, a prolific surgeon and researcher, and I know you've done a lot of research in the realm of knee replacements and hip replacements as well. And, you know, the same thing with the washout. I mean, people will come to me, they'll have an MRI, they have arthritis, they have a meniscus tear. And the reality is, if you have a moderate amount of arthritis at any point, you're probably going to have a meniscus tear, too. I always tell people the primary issue is the arthritis. So going in and getting rid of that meniscus tear doesn't change the fact that you have arthritis, and that pain will probably persist. I mean, I know people always want the least invasive, you know, and when they come to surgery, the least invasive, smallest surgery possible. But I always tell people you want one surgery that's going to fix your problem and then just move on and live your life. The partial and total knees, I mean, you know, I think the concept of a total knee replacement, sometimes people, you know, what exactly is that? Because I think a lot of people think that you are cutting out their entire knee and then putting in a whole new knee.
That's a great question. But I think besides sort of getting to what a knee replacement is, I definitely want to talk about that, is it exactly what you said before, where people feel like, am I too young to have my knee replaced? I tell people that you're too young not to. I mean, you know, if you're 50 years old and you can't walk because you have a terrible knee, you know, fix it, because you're not going to come back when you're 70. The other thing which is sort of interesting is that we always think about people that are too young, right? Is that I get people that come in who are in their late 80s or early 90s and say, am I too old to have knee replacement
surgery? Right, exactly, yeah.
And, you know, the thing is that I tell people, I tend to look at what their physiologic age is and not their chronologic age, which basically means is that I don't look at the number. I look at how healthy they are, how active they are, what are they doing, what their living situation's like. And the reality is that if people are pretty healthy and they're active and they're doing stuff, then at that age, particularly if you're like 90 and you all of a sudden you're not walking properly because you have a bad hip or a bad knee, your risk of falling and running into other problems or problems from medications that try to deal with the pain is often far worse than the risk of having the knee replaced or your hip replaced. So I encourage people is that if they're uncomfortable, it doesn't matter if you're older, if you're younger, just get evaluated. Make sure that you're safe to have surgery, because obviously it is an elective procedure. And we've helped people all the way from my oldest is 103 and my youngest is 13. You know, we have a whole gamut of spectrum in terms of when people need to have surgery. And I think that the important thing is that every patient's different and we treat everybody differently. So sort of getting back to what a knee replacement is, what we effectively do in a knee replacement is that we're shaping the end of your bone and putting a cap that fits on top of it. So we're not sort of cutting the end of the bone off. We're not basically, you know, taking your whole knee out. We're effectively reshaping the end of your bone and then putting a cap that's made out of usually titanium and cobalt chrome. We have ceramic type implants as well that we use for people which have nickel allergies. And we use a plastic bearing that sort of acts instead of your cartilage that will go ahead and act as a cushion between the joints. Now, the thing which becomes interesting is, well, how do you do this? And how do you do it comfortably and easily for patients? And I think that what we've made huge strides now, number one, is in terms of minimally invasive techniques with quad sparing or muscle sparing techniques, so that we're not cutting the tendon, which makes it a lot more comfortable for people, allows them to recuperate more easily, and the pain is often less. We're using advanced pain management techniques for the surgery, so that this way people are not terribly uncomfortable after the surgery. And in terms of the alignment of how we put the knee into place, we're now using computer navigation and robotics to make sure that the implant is really placed where it should be for you. And we can really individualize the procedure to our patients to make sure that functionally they go back to doing the things they want to do and the knee feels as closely as possible to a normal knee as it can. So we've had huge advances with that, and we actually use the Mako robotic system, which allows us to go ahead and really get a CAT scan of the patient's knee before and create a three-dimensional model. Then we can go ahead and reproduce in the operating room with real-time information. So very exciting stuff in terms of what helps in terms of the functionality of the knee and getting people back to doing the things that they really want to do.
Right. I mean, the Mako or the robot, I think it had really changed a lot of that type of surgery. I do think early on people had this idea that, you know, you were somewhere else, you know, down, you know, in another building and there's a robot there doing your surgery. But the concept of it, you know, basically is this: they get a CAT scan, it maps their entire knee. And then in the operating room, you can use these real-time mapping and decide how, you know, the best cut, the best alignment, and then the machine kind of keeps you in that window, so it just reduces that kind of risk of any type of, you know, quote, surgeon error or changes in alignment if the knee moves a certain way or positions in a certain way. And I think it's really, you know, made knee replacement surgery just way more consistent and more minimally invasive in a way. I mean, you can make a smaller incision, you know, which is less pain. And I know you'd use a lot of different modalities for pain, like spinals, which is where they numb the legs, and also nerve blocks. I mean, I think that's your standard protocol these days.
Yes. So we're very aware of pain, and I think that most people are really, that's one of the biggest fears that people tend to have prior to surgery is how uncomfortable they're going to be. So we try to optimize people beforehand, and the first thing we try to do is to do something called prehab or a rehabilitation prior to surgery, because the stronger and more limber the knee is, the better. We try to get them to lose a little bit of weight beforehand. We try to make sure that if they're smoking, that they stop that, that their diabetes is under good control. But as far as anesthesia, most of it's done under a regional anesthetic. You're sleepy, and I think one of the fears that everybody has is with the regional is that, am I going to hear everything? And the answer is no. They give you medicine to keep you sleepy and comfortable so you don't have to go ahead and hear stuff as it's happening. But the upside is that we get people up the same day. They're moving the same day. We use a cold machine that compresses and cools the knee. And usually most patients after a few days are off of narcotics. And we tend to use things like just oral anti-inflammatories to keep people comfortable.
So what do you think the most important message for people to know is?
Most important people to remember is that they don't have to live with pain. I think that knee replacements last a long time. We can get you up and moving. And I think that if you have a concern or a question, please seek out the evaluation by a specialist. And thank you again for another episode of Bone Talk. I'm Dr. Steven Zelikoff. Thank you, Dr. Dar, for joining us. And again, we look forward to speaking to you next month on next episode of Bone Talk.